With this week, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. This week, we are going to be looking at chapters 8, chapters 9, and chapter 10. Don't worry, we're not reading all three chapters. What you're going to do is skim chapter 8, chapter 9, and chapter 10. And again, let me tell you what those chapters are about. Chapter 8 is the rise of Islam, civilization in the Middle East. Chapter 9 is India and Southeast Asia under the impact of Islam. And chapter 10 is Africa and Islam. So skim those chapters. Pick one piece of those three chapters. It doesn't have to be, it's not something in every chapter, just one piece of any one of those chapters. And you're going to be focusing on that for a small project this week. What we're going to be doing is actually kind of doing the work of a real historian by looking at primary and secondary sources. Now I'm going to walk you through this project over the course of the next three slides. This is a five-slide lecture. The last two slides do not have any audio, but rather the second to last slide is an extended definition slide of what a primary source and what a secondary source is. And then the last slide of the lecture gives you examples of primary sources and secondary sources. So hopefully that will be helpful. Slide 2 of this lecture is very long. It's about 6 minutes long. It's a little, well, it's very boring. But on that particular slide, I detail the various tasks a historian does when he or she is trying to understand a primary source, to make sense of it. You want to really pay attention to that slide because you'll be utilizing some of those skills in the project that I introduce on the third slide of the lecture. I just want you to note, though, that when I do slide 2, I'll give you examples for some of the skill sets, and I'll pull examples from chapter 22 in the textbook. You're not reading chapter 22. I don't do chapter 22 until the second part of World Civilization, and some of you won't stick around for the second part of World Civ. But I referenced chapter 22 because I didn't want to steal any of your ideas for chapter 8, 9, or 10. So let's get started. When historians are trying to understand the past, they look at artifacts and written sources to get insight into the past. Two types of sources that historians are really interested in are primary sources and secondary sources. A primary source is a document or written or created, because it could be a piece of artwork, created during the time of the event. It includes diaries, newspapers, music, paintings, drawings, texts, TV shows, etc. Let me give you an example. If you wanted to study the turn of the century from the 20th to the 21st century, you might look at a television show called 24 to get insight as to what the American people were thinking about that moment in time. So that television show, 24, would be a primary document. Now, a secondary source is material written about an event later, such as a book, and it will usually utilize primary sources. Your textbook is the perfect example of a secondary source. Now, there are some key tasks that a historian must employ to be able to come to an understanding of a historical event, time period, or person. So, as I've listed for you on this slide, I've listed for you a number of different tasks that the historian does. First of all, a historian has to be able to follow chronological order. Basically, chronological order is the order in which events happen in time. Historians need to figure out the order in which things happened to get an accurate sense of the relationship among events. As you read history, you want to, and as you look at primary documents, you'd want to figure out the sequence or time order of these events. When you read a secondary source, the person who put together that secondary source has already pulled together the chronological order for you. With primary documents, if you're looking at an array of primary documents, you would have to put together that chronological order yourself. Historians must also clarify and summarize information, whether it's information they've read through a primary or a secondary source. So to clarify means making clear, full, and fully understanding what you've read. One way to do this is by asking yourself questions about the material. In your answers, you want to restate what you've learned. Summarizing means condensing what you've read into fewer words. You're only stating the main thoughts and the most important details. A lot of times when you're reading secondary sources, like your textbook, you're trying to reduce them and make sense of them in your notes. And a third task of a historian would be to identify problems and solutions. Identifying problems means finding and understanding the difficulties faced by a particular group of people at a particular time. You want to notice how the people solve their problem. That's identifying a solution. You want to check further to see how well those solutions worked, and so what the outcomes were. Another skill that historians need to be good at is analyzing motives. That means examining the reasons why a person, a group, or a government took a particular action. Why did they go to war? To make it tied into chapter 22, why did colonization exist? Why did imperialism arise? You want to understand why imperialism, the reasons for imperialism. You'd want to consider the needs, the emotions, the prior experiences, and the goals of the people doing the imperialistic actions. Another task of a historian is to analyze causes and recognize effects. Causes are the events, conditions, and other reasons that lead to an event. Causes happen before the event in time. They explain why it happened. The effects are the results or consequences of the event. One effect often becomes the cause of another effect, resulting in a chain of events. Causes and effects can both be short-term and long-term. Examining the cause and effect relationship helps historians see how events are related and why the events took place. Historians also will utilize compare and contrast various events, personalities, thoughts, behaviors, belief, and institutions in order to really more fully understand them. So in chapter 22, you might compare the different imperialistic powers and how they acted toward the people they colonized and or enslaved. So you might compare things they did similarly, but also contrast things they did differently. You also have to be able to distinguish fact from opinion. Facts are events, dates, statistics, or statements that can be proved to be true. Facts can be checked for accuracy. Opinions are judgments, beliefs, and feelings of the writer or the speaker. You also want to be able to develop a historical perspective. Developing a historical perspective means understanding events and the people in the context of their times. It means not judging the past by current values, but by taking into account the beliefs of the time. Once again, this is key for chapter 22, because in chapter 22, we're going to be talking about slavery and why people started to decide that maybe we should abolish slavery. We're also going to be talking about that notion of the white man's burden. Again, to many of us, the white man's burden sounds offensive today, but in the context of the late 19th century, how does it fit in? We're also going to formulate historical questions. That is important as you examine primary sources. You want to ask yourself how these firsthand accounts, documents, letters, and other records of the past, what kinds of questions do they cause you to think about? So as you analyze a source, for instance, as you analyze a photograph or a picture or a painting, ask questions about what it means and why it is significant. Then when you're doing research, you want to write questions that your research could answer. You also want to be able to hypothesize. That means developing a possible explanation for a historical event. A hypothesis is an educated guess about what happened in the past or what might happen in the future. A hypothesis takes available information, links it to previous experience and knowledge, and comes up with a possible explanation, conclusion, or prediction. You also want to analyze issues. And sorry, I have a typo with my word issues. An issue is a matter of public concern or debate. Issues in history are usually economic, social, political, or moral. Historical issues are often more complicated than they first appear. And sometimes it won't be strictly economical or social or political or moral. It'll cross different lines. Like an economic issue can be a political issue. Slavery was not only a economic issue, a social issue, a political issue, it also was a moral issue, for instance. So analyzing an issue means taking the issue, that controversy apart to find and describe the different points of view about the issue. Because historical issues are very complicated, and they're often a lot more complicated than they originally appear. You also want to be able to analyze assumptions and understand somebody's bias. So an assumption is a belief or a thought that's taken for granted. Some assumptions are based on evidence, some are just based on feeling. Whether assumptions are clearly stated or just implied, you can usually figure out what they are. Bias is a prejudiced point of view. Historical accounts that are biased tend to be one-sided and reflect the personal prejudices of the historian. Or, if it's a primary document, they reflect the point of view, the bias of the creator of that document. So if you're looking at a newspaper article describing a particular event that took place in the 19th century, you have to understand that that particular newspaper reporter went into that situation with a particular lens he or she saw the event through, a bias, if you will. You also have to evaluate decisions in a course of action. That means evaluating decisions means making judgments about the decisions that historical figures have made. Historians evaluate decisions on the basis of their moral implications and their costs and benefits from different points of view. You also want to evaluate the various courses of action, which means carefully judging the choices that historical figures had to make. By doing this, you can better understand why they made some of the decisions that they did. Now, you need to form and support opinions. Historians do more than reconstruct facts about the past. They also form opinions about the information they encounter. Historians form opinions as they interpret the past and judge the significance of historical events and people. They support their opinions with logical thinking, facts, example, quotes, and references to events. You also want to be able to make inferences. Inferences are thoughts and meanings not stated in the material. So when you're looking at your primary documents, for instance, for this assignment, you want to make inferences about what those documents say, meaning read between the lines or look in more detail into the painting or look steadier into the piece of poetry or analyze the speech in a more intense way than more than what is just being provided. Your inferences are based on careful study of what is stated in the passage as well as your own common sense and previous knowledge. So, for instance, if you're looking at a photograph to use as a primary document of a particular event, you need to really try to get at the heart of that photograph. Why did the historian choose that particular angle lens, etc.? You also want to be able to draw conclusions. That means analyzing what you've read and forming an opinion about its meaning. To draw conclusions, you look closely at the facts, combine them with the inferences you make, and then you use your own common sense and experience to decide what the facts mean. So you might draw conclusions about your secondary source, for instance, with this particular project. You might synthesize the information in your secondary source. Synthesizing is a skill historians use in developing interpretations of the past. Like detective work, synthesizing involves putting together clues, information, and ideas to form an overall picture of a historical event. Now, if I had given you, like if you looked at three secondary sources, you might synthesize all those secondary sources to figure out what an event was really all about. Or maybe you'd look at three or four different primary documents and you'd synthesize the information from those primary documents to really understand an event. For instance, to put together your textbook, the authors of the textbook used a huge number of primary documents and secondary sources, and they synthesized the information from all those sources to make sense of the past and put it into a framework for all of you. So now I've gone over all the tasks that a historian needs to employ. Now I want to give you your assignment for week 8. Please let me know if you don't understand. You're going to pick one of the key characteristics of a civilization that we've already talked about this year to explore for any part of chapter 8, 9, or 10. And as I go through this assignment, I'm going to kind of give you a condensed form of what you'll be doing. So let me go over the key characteristics of a civilization once again. We have record keeping, advanced cities, advanced technology, complex institutions, and specialized workers. When I lectured on ancient Rome last week, I lectured on the complex institution in the form of the Republican government. That's what I explored. So, you have to pick one of those key characteristics. So I'm just going to give you an example. The key characteristic that I'm going to focus on is going to be advanced technology, and I'm choosing to look at the advanced technology mentioned in chapter 10. And some of these key characteristics overlap, and I'm fascinated by the advanced technology because the Muslim world was changing at that moment in time that you read about in chapter 10, and I really want to discuss, I want to find out how this technology right around 800 Common Era really allowed merchants, Islamic merchants, to have more power. So the first thing you're going to do is, once you have your key characteristic, is find one primary source and one secondary source representing this key characteristic. One of your sources can come from chapter 8, 9, or 10, meaning you could be using your book as a source, because your book does have primary sources in it. And your book is a secondary source, so the whole book itself is a secondary source, but they do give you primary documents in the book. Sometimes they give you quotes from a document, sometimes they give you pictures, those types of things. So, like any of the pictures you see in your textbook, those are all primary documents. So your book can either be used for a primary source, or your book can be cited as your secondary source. That's fine. But you must then look someplace else, I'm assuming most of you will use the internet, and find the other source on the internet, or go to the library, whatever's easiest for you. And you'll have to use MLA documentation to identify where that other source comes from. So the first thing you're going to do when you find your primary source is you're going to analyze the source using historical perspective. And I discussed this on slide 2. So just to abbreviate it, when you're dealing with historical perspective, we're looking at the creator's opinions, their biases, their assumptions, and their point of view. So if you want to look at a piece of artwork, for instance, so let me kind of go back to my example. My example is going to be, I'm looking at advanced technology, and I'm particularly interested in technology that allowed traders, Muslim merchants, to have more power when they traded in their various ports. So one of the particular pieces of technology I'm going to look at, for instance, would be the invention of the astrolabe. And this was an instrument that enabled shippers to calculate latitude. So for my primary source, maybe I'm going to go on the internet and I'm going to find a picture of an ancient astrolabe device which allowed shippers to calculate latitude. That picture, that if it's a painting, if you will, I will look at that to see, is it accurate? You know, did the painter, the artist, did they represent it correctly? Were they making assumptions about what this device could do? What kind of biases did this person bring into this painting? So did the painter actually have real skills? So you're going to do that in about 8 sentences. The secondary source, when you find that, you want to discuss the analysis and interpretation that was put forth in that secondary source. Again, I talk about analysis and interpretation on slide 2. So my secondary source, I'm going to use the textbook, and I'm going to look at page 177 in the textbook, and I'm going to use this textbook as my secondary source, and I'm going to talk about what it says in this box called Solving Problems. It talks about technology and trade. And I'm going to analyze how valid this information is. Did the textbook writers, did they do all their homework? Did they do a nice job discussing how things like the Astrolab could really benefit a merchant? You're going to then upload this work. And when you upload it, make sure you tell me what your topic is. And my topic, what I'm going to be looking at is Muslim, I'm looking at advanced technology used by the Muslim merchants. And my key characteristic I'm going to tell you is advanced technology. And then I'm going to go on to discuss in 8 sentences each my primary document and my secondary source. Now, I mentioned as a primary document, maybe I looked at a painting of an astrolabe. Well, maybe I actually found an ancient merchant's journal, and that could be my primary document. And in this journal, the merchant might have talked about what it was like to use some of these early devices to navigate the seas. I would discuss his point of view, his biases, his opinions, because again, that's just one individual's insight. Hopefully this will make sense to you and you'll be able to have some fun with this project. Now, once again, the last 2 slides do not have audio. They're just to help you with a more detailed discussion of what a primary and a secondary source is and some examples of each of those.